Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters, our new Saturday morning agricultural news program. Let me introduce you to your host, farm broadcaster Ken Root from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Good morning. Has the government shut down? Seriously, I don't know, as this program was recorded on Friday afternoon and the potential for a government closing was still pending. I'm going to assume that we are in a lapse in government services and assure you it's not funny to me or those who are placed in a position of uncertainty. You know, it's like the times when the electricity goes off. Life still goes on. I followed such an event several years ago when an ice storm kept the electricity off for about 5 days. The kids panicked and could hardly function without electronic games, TV, and internet. They were shaking like a dog on July the 4th. Their parents became so agitated that they began to try any means to get life back to normal. They either took the family to a motel where the electricity was on, or they put in a generator to try to bring the house back to life. The old people built a fire in the fireplace, got blankets, and either visited, played cards, or assembled puzzles. Since an ice storm keeps the temperature about 31 degrees, no one froze to death, but many icy road accidents occurred, and some people asphyxiated themselves by running a generator in a closed garage. So today, I hope your power is on and the roads aren't icy. The disagreements in Washington, D.C. may be a problem, but this is real America, where we did well without an overarching federal government, and where we can do so again. The song of the week is a ballad from Hank Williams, Jr. Pretty much says it all about taking care of yourself while the rest of the world loses its cool.
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those woods and moan boys raised on shotguns. City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beech nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. We say grace, we say California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Here's what's on our agenda for this half hour. We have a farm bill. It was signed on Thursday, but there are some things that didn't get into the farm bill that the administration wants states to enforce. Organic agriculture is booming. Stores have a lot more organic foods, both raw and processed. We'll talk about how some farmers are converting acreage to these products. And since it's now officially winter, a prediction of how wet, cold, and long this season will be. Well, there were some milestones this week in agriculture, and to talk about them, I'm going to bring in Dustin Hoffman, our supervising editor for the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. What was your reaction to seeing that the farm bill finally was signed?
I think I was pretty much like a lot of people in agriculture, ag media, farmers, you know, breathing a sigh of relief that this was done. I found it interesting that the bill was signed on Thursday, and then Friday morning I was on my social media, and I saw my Facebook posts from 2 years prior where I had sat down with Congressman Colin Peterson back in Minnesota to talk about what the chances were of getting the farm bill done early in the Trump administration. And, you know, so in 2 years we kind of went the full gamut there, and I knew that wasn't the first time we talked to him, but it was definitely a sigh of relief that it was finally done.
Well, it seems like these farm bills take 4 years and 11 months to get worked out because, you know, basically everybody's concerned about the next one as soon as the last one is signed. But the last year is definitely pivotal. And it was interesting this time regarding the fact that the House bill stalled because the Republicans wanted to make it a referendum on basically food stamps, on welfare reform. How did that play out?
Well, of course, this was brought up to the House, and it did not pass the House by a very large margin when it originally went through the original H.R. 2. And in fact, that those provisions were what ended up sending it to conference committee, because Ag Committee Chairman in the Senate, Pat Roberts from Kansas, and Ranking Member Stabenow from Michigan, said right off the bat that this was not going to happen. In fact, Stabenow told Roberts that the reforms for SNAP were not going to get to the Senate, so don't even try. And he didn't have the support, and he didn't have the strength, I should say, to push it through. And so it was already dead on arrival when it came to the Senate, and that's what forced the conference committee. And that was what caused a lot of the speculation. Would the House back off on the SNAP reforms, and would the president back off on these wanted SNAP reforms for the sake of getting farm legislation done? And that seemed to be what the case was here, and that's how we got the conference report and how we got it moved through the both houses very quickly and signed yesterday.
However, Dustin, not to be deterred, the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture took another stab at the same thing after the farm bill was passed.
Yeah, in football terms, it seems the administration's going to do an end around on the farm bill and still get those changes they want to close some of those loopholes. And in fact, we have a statement from President Trump we can play right now talking about the directive he gave to Secretary Perdue.
Therefore, I have directed Secretary Perdue to use his authority under the law to close work requirement loopholes in the food stamp program. Under this new rule, able-bodied adults without dependents will have to work or look for work in order to receive their food stamps. Today's action will help Americans transition from welfare to gainful employment, strengthening families, and uplifting communities.
So basically what it's going to do is it's going to tighten up those loopholes, and it's going after some Clinton administration rule changes that were made. So we're going back into the 90s, and this basically is going to change the waivers for states. It used to be under the Clinton administration rules that you had to be working or in job training for at least 20 hours a week, or you could get a waiver from the state or, you know, the region or tribe, whatever your situation was, to get a waiver from that 20 hours a week. The administration has really been pushing that that's where the abuses have been happening, and that the abuses that they say are happening with SNAP. And so the loophole closing that they're proposing right now is to say that these waivers are only going to be granted in places where the unemployment rate is 7% or higher, which is a high rate of unemployment. And you need to think about the U.S. rate is just under 4% at 3.7. So it's going to be an interesting situation.
But don't all of these enforcements have to be carried out by the states?
They do, but the way the rule would be written is that the states would not no longer have that jurisdiction to make that decision. That would be set by the federal guidelines. And if you don't have the 7% unemployment rate, then you don't have the jurisdiction to give the waivers.
What is the process now on what the secretary has stated and the president has endorsed on these changes?
Well, the next process is going to be to get a rule drawn up. It's similar to what we're dealing with right now with the E-15 rule. We have to get a rule drawn up, and then it enters a 60-day comment period. And since that announcement was made yesterday, believe me, comments have already been coming in. You can just check social media, or you could even check statements from both sides of the aisle yesterday, including Debbie Stabenow and Mike Conaway, chairman of the House Ag Committee, both endorsing or vilifying this move by the Trump administration.
Well, it's interesting to see how it all played out. I'm pleased that you were able to follow it for our audience all the way through. But now it's a matter of, you know, every time this administration is stopped by the opposing party, they take another tack to see if they can get to where they really wanted to go. So it's going to be a battle. It's going to be a very different battle once we move into the new year, since the ranking member Peterson now becomes the chair of the House Ag Committee. How's that going to play out?
Well, that's the presumption as of right now. Of course, none of those decisions have been made concrete at this time. I mean, we still don't even know who the speaker will be. It's presumed to be Nancy Pelosi. But we already know that the House Democrats are against this kind of a move. We know that presumed Ag Committee Chair Colin Peterson is against this move. And right now, with the Democrats in control of the House, I don't see it becoming a bipartisan piece of legislation. I mean, it's going to have to take some real wheeling and dealing if they wanted to push that through. And I don't see the Democratic side of the aisle even thinking about a compromising on a situation like that.
Dustin Hoffman, your work is on KXEL every day and on our website, iowaagnet.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ken.
When we come back, the markets and a weather prediction for the Iowa winter season. And later, a discussion about the food we eat and how more growers are trying to shift to organic production. This is Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
More than ever, it's critical to take advantage of favorable grain prices when you see them, even when your crop is still in the field. You can when you have a thoughtful crop revenue plan with Farm Credit Services of America. Our crop insurance officers have the expertise to deliver a plan that can help you lock in those crop prices, protect your income, and your working capital too. We'll show you how. Learn more by calling Farm Credit Services of America. Agriculture works here.
Some of the best sounds you'll ever hear are generic, safe, effective, even money-saving, just like FDA-approved generic drugs. Even if they don't come in the exact same color or shape as their brand name equivalents, they have the same key ingredients and go through a rigorous review process. Talk to your doctor or pharmacist today and visit fda.gov/generic drugs. Generics are safe, effective, and can save you money. You'll like the sound of that.
Green Acres is the place to be. Farm living is the life for me. Land spreading out so far and wide.
Keep Manhattan, just give me that countryside.
New York is where I'd rather stay. I get allergic smelling hay. Just adore penthouse view. Darling, I love you. Give me Park Avenue.
Now, here again is Weekend Ag Matters host, Ken Root.
Grain markets ended the week with a mixed day on Friday. Corn exports are still strong as almost half the marketing year's projections are already sold. Soybeans were down, waiting for one buyer, China. Brazil and Argentina are having good weather for their soybean growing season, and the tropical areas will begin harvests by the first of the year. Here's how we finished up on the grain markets in Chicago on Friday. March corn was up 3 1/4, 378.5. May up 3 1/4, 386.25. And December up 2.5 at 399.25. January soybeans were down 8 3/4 yesterday afternoon, finishing at 884.75. March down 8.5 at 897.75. The markets will be open on Sunday night for the overnight session and then close at noon on Monday. They will remain closed until 8:30 on Wednesday morning following Christmas. What kind of weather is Iowa going to have for the next 3 months? I called my longtime friend Bryce Anderson, chief meteorologist for DTN, and put him on the carpet to tell me what to expect. Bryce, the weather, from my perspective, just as a lay observer, is that it's been erratic. Will you be able to attribute anything really to El Nino or a trend toward anything that you believe is going to happen if the El Nino comes about?
The El Nino influence is, like I say, starting to act like it's going to be more of a feature over the southern tier of states during the next several weeks and into the balance of the winter season, Ken. There's another feature that is probably going to come into play, though, and that is the weakening of some upper air winds over the North Pole region called the polar vortex. That feature is showing signs of being kind of erratic and not very well organized as we look out over the next 3 weeks or so. When the wind pattern over that polar region is not well organized, it's prone to sending some very cold waves farther south here into the Midwest. And we are likely to see some of those outbreaks during the next 10 days to 2 weeks, and then periodically even into the latter part of the winter season. So I think with those two features kind of combining, we are going to have a lot more back and forth swings in our Midwest temperature and precipitation occurrences during the balance of this winter season than we would if just El Nino was kind of running the show.
For Iowa, for the balance of the winter season and as far as you want to go into spring, what do you think the farmers can expect out of this weather that'll impact them?
I think it's going to be a tough start to the spring season, Ken, because during the balance of this winter, with these kind of back and forth El Nino and polar vortex features sort of combining to cause an influence in the Iowa weather pattern, I think that on balance we are going to have a colder than average winter season, probably lasting longer than we'd like, well into March. And along with that, areas of the state, I think especially the eastern half of the state, are going to see more snowfall than typical during an El Nino winter. And this means that for the spring season, it's going to be a slower start. And I think that we are going to be backed up into some pretty short time frames to get all our field work done and then move into planting for the year 2019. And that's the big influence that I see. I don't think that when we get into the growing season that it's going to be a real stressful one in terms of a lot of sudden heat waves. But just getting started, I think, is going to be a real big challenge this next year.
Bryce, could you refer me to another specialist for a second opinion?
You know, if you've got a medical problem and you don't like it, well, then that's what you do. So I'm thinking I'm going to get a second opinion on this, all right?
That's Bryce Anderson, apparently with enough job security to say something other than what we want to hear. A discussion of organic agriculture in the 21st century in a moment.
Made a trip to the office of the FSA to get some money from the old USDA. I signed up for my AMTA and my LDP. Now I'm waiting for a check from the CCC. Living on the LDP. Checks from the CCC. My bins are all stuffed, but my pockets are empty, and I'm living on the LDP.
Now, here again is Weekend Ag Matters host, Ken Root.
If you shop for food, especially in the produce aisle, you'll notice a lot more organic products. There are reasons for this, and the main one is growers are finding more potential profitability. So if they can serve the customer with what they want and get them to pay more for it, well, it's a fundamental of business. How do growers shift to organic production? Let's bring in Anna Haster, digital editor and farm broadcaster for the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network, who followed this story over the past week and longer. I guess you were getting some feedback on this from the Farmers Business Network meeting over in Omaha, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. So when I was attending the Farmers Business Network Farmer to Farmer Conference in Omaha, Nebraska last week, I met with this company called AgriSecure. Now, what AgriSecure does is they help farmers make the transition from conventional crop production to organic crop production. So that's really what sparked the fire underneath all of these stories that I produce over the last couple of weeks, was my conversation with them and just the interest that I formed after talking with J.P. Ray, who is the CEO of this company, and hearing how organic crop production can be a viable option for farmers.
How do you go about making the transition to organic?
What AgriSecure recommends is that farmers start small. You don't want to bite off more than you can chew. And so just start with a couple acres, whether you want to do maybe 20, 50, but regardless, start small. And it's going to take some time. Roughly two crop years, they say 36 months is when your land has to be free of prohibited substances, so insecticides, herbicides, all those different chemicals. So during those 2 years, you're in this transition phase is what they call it, and you're going to grow crops as if you're an organic farmer, but you still need to sell them at conventional prices because your land is still not free from all those chemicals. So it does take some time, but it also gives farmers an opportunity to learn about organics a little more in depth during that time, get a better handle on what their costs are going to look like for production, and maybe some of the returns that they'll see at the end of the crop year.
Well, Anna, I'm sure everybody else has to make their decision on this as they're growing their first few trial acres, but from what you can tell, do the benefits outweigh the challenges?
From what I gathered at the Farmer to Farmer Conference in Omaha, Nebraska, it does sound like the benefits do outweigh the challenges. You know, some of those challenges might be finding a market to sell your product to that's nearby, or another one, I talked to an organic farmer from Manning, Iowa, who said, you know, you really need to think about how some of the agronomic practices that you have during conventional production could impact your agronomics in organic production. Weeds, for example, if you have a conventional field where you're really struggling with weeds, you need to kind of get a better control over those weeds before you transition to organic, because they're still going to be present during that time too. But all in all, it sounds like the benefits outweigh the challenges, as it provides an opportunity to make a little more of a profit. You're selling these products at a little bit higher of a premium, and they also talked about the opportunity for the younger generation to return to the farm, because this farm will be viable from the profits that they're seeing from organic production. And last but not least, when I spoke to Bryce Earlbeck of Manning, Iowa, him and his father have been in organic production for roughly 4 years now. He said that the overall mood on the farm has just increased too. And I think that's really important. Just the overall happiness, not having to stress about about whether or not you're going to make a profit or if you're just going to break even that year. And so just having a few less stresses by going to organic production has improved the overall feeling and overall mood that these farmers are experiencing.
Anna Hastert, our digital editor and farm broadcaster, thank you very much.
Thanks, Ken.
That's our Weekend Ag Matters show for this week. We'd run a best of show next week, but we don't have one. So we'll be back next Saturday with another view of the world. In the meantime, may you find peace on earth, experience the joy of a child, and give thanks for a country where we can worship as we wish, vote as we wish, and live as we wish, as long as our freedom doesn't infringe on the freedom of others. Put another log on the fire and spend a little time watching life go by. It's very therapeutic.
Everyone's a child at Christmas and looks for presents under the Christmas tree. Everyone's a child at Christmas and loves the happy holiday jollity.